Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1206.PR0627, certificate number 40714, spontaneous combustion.
On March 26th, 1986, just outside...
The day that will live in infamy.
Oh boy, I will after you hear this.
I was a senior in high school.
Do you feel like... What do you think you were doing on March 26th?
When did the Challenger explode?
January 86, maybe?
Yeah.
So you were still in mourning.
Yeah. It was a tough time.
Still had your shirt. Still leaving some plastic flowers by the chain link fence every day.
I think by March of 86, it was clear that I was not going to graduate from high school if I didn't do something dramatic.
Extraordinary. Was it spontaneous human combustion? Did that work?
It didn't work because I kept having it happen to other people. No, so it
here's my English teacher. Oh, you want to give me an F? Back off.
I'm no fire starter. I'm fierce. No, so it was a time where I started to have to really scramble to figure out, because I obviously hadn't applied to any colleges either. And it only, I think, in March or April started to dawn on me that high school was about to be over and I was going to be responsible for...
Uh-oh.
The entire remainder of my own life.
What does scrambling look like at that point?
Well, it was clear that the school didn't want me to stay. They didn't want me to fail.
They're incentivized.
And so there was a lot of trying to figure out like how they were going to help me gin up enough credits.
Get you out of
out
of their halls.
So I had a job at that point and my my boss, who actually listens to this show.
Hey.
Richard Hadley.
He's not still working at the radio station or anything.
He's not. He lives in Iowa, I think, or Minneapolis, maybe.
You should be impressed that I remembered where you worked.
I know. Good job. Like,
he's not still at the TCBY, I hope.
But he and the schools got together, and he gave me credit. They gave me school credit for the job that I had. Although there was no educational aspect.
An unprecedented concession.
You know, like junior DJ gets you know, 8 credits.
Somehow it's math credit and English credit?
Yeah, weird.
What a job.
But it was, there was a little bit of scramble that spring.
Chicanery? Well, let's move across the continent. Indiana Jones Arrow takes us from Anchorage, Alaska, all the way across the continent.
Is there like a Ford Tri-Motor that's with a dotted line behind it that's going to take us there?
To the shores of Lake Champlain in upstate New York, just across the Vermont border, outside the little town of Crowns Point.
Have you been there?
I've never been to Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
I've been to Vermont.
Montpelier.
It's probably nice, right? The lake. There's a, beautiful. It's got a sea monster.
Yeah, that's right.
They got Champy.
Their own Nessie.
It's like somehow even more spurious than Nessie. Because at least with Nessie, people were like, I think I saw something in the fog. There'll be a monster. Whereas in Vermont, they're just like, what if we had one of those? Why should there just be one lock?
Yeah, somebody took all the chunks out of my Ben and Jerry's. It's got to be Champy.
Champy. Champy's been eating my cherries, Garcia.
Champy's been eating my cherries and chunks.
Outside town in an apartment building, a 58-year-old man named George Mott is watching an episode of The Twilight Zone with a lady friend. And wait, would this have been like, is that about the right time for the Twilight Zone revival?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Is he watching a rerun?
I'm sure it was a rerun.
No, it could be a new one. Because look, the revival one started in 85.
Oh.
So he could be watching a weird all-color Twilight Zone with Judith Light in it that you and I have never seen, even though we say we've seen every Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I've never seen. I don't think I saw it.
Did you even watch Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories?
No.
They were so amazing, and yet you and I have seen zero between them.
But we for sure have seen every Twilight Zone.
If they were amazing, wouldn't we have seen them in the intervening 35 years? Well, maybe they weren't so amazing, Stephen.
My sense was that they were just rehashes of the old stories. Weren't they just redos?
Some of the Twilight Zones, I think, were remakes.
I definitely saw the one where they remade the monster on the wing of the airplane. With William Shatner.
But that was in the movie. With Lithgow?
Yeah, with
that's Lithgow. In the movie.
Oh, the movie. All, okay.
Then pretty I saw much the movie. Most of those segments were episodes, or at least two or three of them are. I never saw the show. Anyway, so he and a lady friend are watching Twilight. It's better to imagine him watching kind of a classic rerun on somewhere higher up the dial, right? Higher up the UHF dial.
It seems unlikely that anyone would be watching the color Twilight Zone and have a lady friend, right? It's one or the other.
After watching whatever extraordinary series of events transpired there, maybe it's Rod Serling saying, but these are the kind of stories that we can only tell
maybe,
in Twilight Zone.
Maybe it was the one about the little boy that killed all the people in his village if they weren't good to him.
He just wished them away to the cornfield. They're not dead. They're in the cornfield.
Oh, they're just in the cornfield. You're right.
Does he ever bring anyone back? I can't remember.
From the cornfield? No, yeah. I don't think in the
episode.
It's a
one-way trip to the cornfield. He turns to his lady friend and says, nothing weird like that ever happens to me. I wish it would. That's the kind of thing you shouldn't say.
What? No.
Also, it's the kind of thing that maybe he didn't say and is only added retroactively to the story.
Yeah.
To make it a little better.
Seems unlikely.
That's the last anybody sees him for 2 days. His son, Kendall, is unable to get George to answer the phone.
Wait, does the lady friend get up and leave at some point in the story?
After he says, something weird never happens to me, she's like, humph, I can't believe you'd say that to me, and stomps out.
That, or she said, oh, well, this is going to be weird.
She was just over for Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories and a TV dinner. Mm-hmm. Once she was done with her Salisbury steak and her string beans and her compote.
Nobody hears from him, or she gets up and goes.
She gets up and leaves. And then for the next couple days, his son Kendall, who apparently lives nearby, cannot get him to answer the phone, starts to worry about his 58-year-old dad. That's an age at which you might want to check in on dad if he's not picking up the phone.
58?
Sorry, I mean, for you, a youthful 58.
I'm not 58, but...
Can you imagine somebody so young and vibrant?
I'm just feeling like nobody needs to come check on me.
How did he even take time to stop all his water skiing to watch Twilight Zone? That's what you're wondering. Why did he only have one lady friend over?
I think I'm just afraid that people are going to start checking on me, and that's not what I want.
What is the age at which
leave me alone?
What's the right age nowadays to start checking on people?
These days?
It might be later than 86.
Yeah, I think. Well,
because today you can text.
I think you've got to be in your 80s before anybody's checking on you, unless you're sick, unless you have an illness.
But imagine somebody doesn't text you back for 2 days. Oh. I mean, if it's, you know, a girl, you're not going to show up at her house. That would be weird.
You routinely go more than 2 days without me texting you back or you texting me back. Sometimes we text each other and it just hangs there for 6 or 8 days.
That's only when there's literally nothing to say. Like I puzzled over it for so long and I was like, yeah, got nothing. So whatever that age is, in 1986, it was 58 for young Kendall Mott,
yeah,
who stops by his dad's apartment and is
Kendall
alarmed.
Kendall probably wanted to borrow money. That's why he was texting his, or calling his dad.
Hey,
Dad.
My truck got repossessed again. His dad's like, Kendall, you are not serious people. No, he comes to the door and finds that the doorknob of the apartment is warm, which is not what you want. Mm-mm. Wondering what that could be, he lets himself in and immediately notices something is wrong. The whole interior of the house has been smoked to the degree that the windows are browned. There's kind of a layer of kind of oily ash covering the walls, which, given the title of the episode, I don't think it gives anything away to tell you that that layer of oily ash is what is left of his father, 58-year-old George Mott.
Now, wait, is this show called Spontaneous Combustion or Spontaneous Human Combustion?
We'll talk about other things that can spontaneously combust.
Because spontaneous human combustion
it's
was
worse.
What
it's much worse than spontaneous combustion.
But that's what it evolved into, right? That became the phrase. Spontaneous combustion could be a pile of oily rags.
It's been called a few things over the years. Well, since you're more interested in oily rags,
yeah.
Fine, let's get to that. Lots of things can just ignite by themselves, seemingly. It's happened.
And a passion in one's breast.
For example, fervor.
Fervor.
Often fervor is right. What ignites.
Right.
Maybe passion first, then fervor. If you're storing things, this is something you care about. You know, if you have $20 million of cotton down by the docks, you do not want that to just decide to be a fire.
Right.
Instead
corn
of cotton.
In a corn crib.
Right. It happens to charcoal. It's happened to seed-based oils. I don't know how much flax oil you have sitting in your prepper kit.
A manageable amount.
Just a couple rooms, a couple couple drums. copra, that fuel they make out of coconut meat.
I'm not sure I know about copra.
We're not in the right, latitudinal zone to worry about copra when things go south. But
are people in the Maldives?
Yeah,
like,
you can burn coconut meat derived fuel.
Whoa.
It's if you don't have peat, it's the peat of the Maldives. They're always saying that.
Yeah, the peat of the Maldives.
The T-shirt will say the snow globe will say, "Come try the peat of the Maldives." It's most common in hay, and in particular, and counterintuitive, this is like the Mpemba effect of hay. It only happens in wet hay.
Yeah.
Dry hay, you're pretty good. Wet hay can catch fire.
Well, now, so I often get, have I told you about chip drop?
Chip drop.
Chip drop.
I'm going to guess. It's a gambling strategy?
No.
It's a weight loss strategy.
No.
You drop the chip into the guac. Chip drop. Do you have a KGB handler?
Chip drop is an app. Here in Washington, you know, there are a lot of trees and a lot of arborists. The place is lousy with arborists.
More arborists than trees some days.
And there are a lot of trees that fall or get chopped down or whatnot.
We're recording in the wrong place today because a lot of trees fell down.
Oh, my God. There are trees falling down everywhere in Washington right now.
We're recording after a bomb cyclone, doesn't just mean a really good 90s cyclone.
It's not the bomb cyclone.
Right.
And actually, there's another bomb cyclone following on the heels of that bomb cyclone.
Wait, really?
Yeah. So we have to record at Ken's today because my house had no power at all. And the bunker has no internet and limited
power. It has power, but not internet somehow.
Yeah. You can't get internet on your phone either. So I had to drive all the way across town. And they had closed they'd closed all the lanes on the bridge. And guess why? Not because of the storm. Because
it's regularly scheduled construction.
Yeah, they decided to fill potholes on the day that the whole region is without power.
They're like, hey, it's a lot clearer this morning. Yeah. Let's close the Ship Canal Bridge.
Yeah, there were three guys out shoveling tar into a hole. Chip drop is when they're chopping up trees, then they throw the tree limbs into their chippers. And some of the chippers are big chippers. They can chip a
What are we picturing? Like a truck? Well, a truck sized chipper?
Yeah. A
Volkswagen chipper Beetle sized chipper?
That's about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They tow it behind the big truck and then they can throw a whole log in there and chip it up. But then they have all these chips. And so you can go on to Chip Drop and say, I'll take your next load of chips.
I want chips. Because you're going to, what? It's mulch?
Yeah, mulch. You spread it around. And so over the years, I've had many, many big dump trucks pull up in my front yard and just dump a huge load of chips. And then it sits there and smokes.
Right.
And often...
This happens to compost piles.
Yeah. The chips in the center will actually turn to ash so that when I go out and...
Maybe you should not be on Chip Drop so often. It seems like you're not using your mulch as often as they would like to bring you mulch.
I actually called the local fire department one time because the chip pile was smoking so badly. And the fire department actually came out. And they said, well, here's the thing about your chip pile. It's far enough away from everything else that if it catches on fire, it'll just burn. So we're not worried about it.
Also, if it's burning because it's wet chips, they can't spray it with a hose.
Yeah,
it'll just make it worse. It'll just get wetter and then maybe smoke more.
So they said the thing will smoke until you spread it. And I got out and spread it. But there was like ash in the center.
The thing about wet hay or compost or apparently mulch is that that's an environment that can lead to bacteria or mold creating fermentation, and then you know you start to make ethanol out of your compost or chips or
really that's what happens.
Yeah, like hay, your hay is turning into delicious ethanol hay.
But what ignites the ethanol?
Well, that's a good question.
Thank you.
You know, ethanol has a very low flash point. You know, as low as 57 degrees Fahrenheit. Apparently, ethanol will just catch fire if sufficiently provoked.
That seems really low.
It seems really, and there's going to be an even more astonishing low temperature fact coming up. This is called suspense. Maybe I should write for Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories.
You should have. Well, is that why when you get gasoline at the gas station, it's really cold? Do they keep like gasoline intentionally cold? It's just maybe because it's buried underground.
Yeah, I assume it's because it's underground. It seems like it would be very expensive to put refrigeration under each pump. But often what, I mean, this is usually speculative, but what could it be? It could just be a static electricity spark.
Mm.
You know, a mouse runs around, another,
damn it,
a series of, a part of your chip pile collapses and suddenly friction like a matchbook and then whoom. And oh. What happens there is you get like in all these cases, whether it's cotton or copra or your chip drop, it's an exothermic reaction is happening. Some kind of thermal runaway thing is happening whereby, the reaction puts out heat, and the heat makes the reaction increase. So you get like a feedback loop that ends with a massive hay bale fire.
But there has to be some inciting spark. It doesn't just catch fire because of pressure.
When we say spontaneous combustion, we think it's seemingly spontaneous, but I think typically it's not just a pile of compost being compost can spontaneously combust. I think something has to spark it, but it could just
be compost.
It could just compost is always doing that. Not compote in the TV dinners. So going back to, let's say, something more exciting than chip drop catches fire. Like, let's say, for example, a 58-year-old retiree in Crowns Point, New York.
Okay.
Because Kendall walks into the bedroom and is shocked to see that the mattress has apparently lit on fire, you know, the bedding and the a lot of plastic. The fire was in the bed, but most of the bedding is in pretty good shape. The ceiling is in pretty good shape. The plastic items around are kind of randomly melted. There's clearly been a fire, even though some of the bedding seems untouched. Like the TV has melted. Items in the fridge, in some account, have melted. A plastic fly swatter has melted. And yet, there's like a book of matches sitting like 3 feet from the bed, untouched. It's clear from the black oily spot in the bed, even though some of the sheets are fine, that sadly, his 58-year-old father is no longer on the mortal plane of Crowns Point.
There's nothing left of the dad, not his feet and his socks or something like that?
So the fire department is called, and they find several pounds of ash and bone. There are recognizable parts of a rib cage. There's part of a skull, although it seems to have shrunken to an unusual amount which makes me wonder if there's a usual amount for a skull to shrink after a house fire.
Hmm.
In one account, part of the right leg is there, and this is a traditional marker of these spontaneous human combustion cases.
Really?
If
somebody is murdered by fire, their right leg burns, but if it's spontaneous combustion, is it the right leg always or a leg?
Often there is a leg or two, sometimes just part of a leg. There's often arms. These appear to be torso-centered events.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay. Right.
It's a TCE.
Yeah.
And did you grow up reading stories of spontaneous human combustion?
I did.
Me too.
I did, and I was
It's always a guy in a chair in his boarding house in Manchester or something.
Yeah, that's right. And he's smoking a cigarette or something.
Or sometimes mysteriously not.
Yeah, and then he's gone, and all that's left are his...
In the morning, he's a spot.
Yeah, tennis shoes and...
Yeah, and often there are, as I say, hands and feet, limbs sometimes survive. The skull often survives.
I think I actually, back in the day when there were still True Detective magazines, I think I may have seen pictures of the aftermath of spontaneous human combustion.
Yeah, I was looking at pictures this morning, and they're perfect for this. You know, as we said before, we grew up in kind of this Generation X bubble of... you know, mysteries of the unexplained are a very important part of life.
Did you ever see detective magazines of the era?
No, I never read those because the pulps did survive.
Yeah, my babysitter got them all, and they had murder scenes, and apparently the convention at the time was just put a black bar over the eyes
because then it's not disturbing.
Yeah, and then you can't know who it is, and it's people like. Those were crazy magazines when I think about it, especially, my babysitter, like, leaving them around.
They were usually black and white photos, right? Which helps.
Yeah.
And the other thing that helps is, like, spontaneous human combustion in particular, they're just gory enough to be kind of, visceral and titillating, but they're not actually, you're not actually seeing slashed necks or whatever. There's a smoldering pile with a foot or two.
Yeah, there's no like screaming skull.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really, there's no guy with a chainsaw to imagine also.
The universe
is the culprit. It's a mystery. So these kind of appeared in a lot of these Time Life books that we were reading about oddities of the universe.
Because there was also all of that, like the unexplained supernatural stuff, right?
Right. Judge Crater leaves his club, and where is he? Was it aliens? Was it ghosts? Was it the mob? Did he fall into a hole? These stories were all, as we say in the name, unexplained.
Right.
And for whatever reason, there was something kind of pleasantly old-timey about a lot of them. You weren't actually worried about this happening in your neighborhood because it was always Amelia Earhart or a squadron of fighter jets in the Bermuda Triangle. It all seemed kind of historical and almost scholarly.
Unless you lived in Lake Champlain.
Well, that's what I think about this. I was fascinated by these combustion stories because a lot of them, I had never seen Stonehenge or the pyramids. I didn't really think of alien invasion as something I was going to have to deal with. But these guys were just sitting in a chair reading a book.
Watching Twilight Zone, and the thing you did.
Exactly. And the stories are always very specific. The nearest lamp was 18 feet away. Mm-hmm. A straw hat at her feet was untouched. They always have these kind of little details. The straw hat was untouched?
How did something in the refrigerator melt?
And this is something that could happen to me, And it turns out they have a long history. Like the ones we read about, I think always seemed like they were maybe... I'm imagining like a guy in the 30s, sitting in his little loft or whatever.
But they did seem like a modern problem.
Yeah, you weren't reading about medieval people catching on fire.
No.
But the phrase spontaneous human combustion actually goes back to the 1740s.
Whoa.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved.
Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
In 1731, Cornelia Zangari Bandi, an Italian noblewoman.
Oh, I'm glad that you specified she was Italian, because if she was German, you pronounce that in a weird way.
Cornelia Zangari Bandi. No, she is an Italian noblewoman living in the Papal States east of Rome, the Emilia-Romagna region. Cesena, I don't know where that is. She heads to her chamber. And in all these stories, that's the mistake.
It's never a bedroom.
Don't go to your chamber.
Always a chamber.
I guess sometimes it's a bedroom. Don't go to your bedroom or chamber. Nobody. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is nobody ever is walking down the street and they suddenly catch fire.
Right, I see.
You know?
Yeah. Don't curse God by saying, nothing interesting ever happens to me, and then go to your chamber.
Nobody at the photocopier at the office is ever like, whoom. Like, these are all just somebody in a chair.
Yeah.
And this account was the account of her final minutes of the 62-year-old nobleman, or her final night anyway, was written down by a local a cleric, a prebend named Bianchiani, and then somehow found its way to Paolo Rolli in London. He was an Italian-born, a librettist by trade. You know, in the 1740s, you can make a good living as a librettist.
Yeah, sure.
You're kind of a librettist.
Yeah, but it doesn't pay anymore.
You write lyrics forward pop music. Mm-hmm. It's not a Handel opera you're accompanying, but
yeah, there was a big to-do on the Omnibus Facebook page about whether or not it was millennials or Gen Xers who first started stealing indie rockers' music.
I'm Gen X, and I stole a ton of indie rock.
I know,
but I was a little maybe too old, because I was in my late 20s.
Yeah, it was embarrassing that you were doing it, because you were like,
because I could have gone to Sam Goody and bought the CD. instead, I'm like, whoa, this would be free if I just downloaded this at work.
At that age, people I knew were still having shelves like custom built into their home to hold their CD collections.
That's my brother's basement. Yeah. It's still nothing but CD height shelves, which maybe they don't make anymore. Now you have to get an elderly craftsman.
Yeah, really not useful for anything else, right? I mean, you can't even like store your shoes.
What's the shortest book? Look at those Lone Wolf and Cub comic books behind you. Like, I could put those on a CD shelf.
Yeah, but they're not. But they're too deep, right?
That's true.
Oh yeah.
The Lone Wolf ones are little squares.
Yeah, those are.
It's true, but think how many of those you'd have to buy, because my brother probably has, you know, 8,000 CDs. Yeah. and why are we saying this? Oh, right. Fighting over whose fault Napster was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back then, before Napster, Paolo Rolli could make a nice living. He is a translator. He moves to London. His English is very good. He produces the first Italian translation of Paradise Lost.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a big name. He also somehow is a member of the Royal Society, which means he's interested in science. And since he can translate Bianchiani's account of the Contessa's death, this is what he writes. The Countess Cornelia Bandi, in the 62nd year of her age, was all day as well as she used to be, but at night was observed when at supper, dull and heavy.
She looked like,
I don't want somebody writing about me that I look dull and heavy at supper every time I look dull and heavy at supper.
What you really don't want is someone to caption a photograph of you that way. Ken Jennings, dull and heavy on the latest episode.
Dull and heavy at right. She retired, was put to bed, where she passed 3 hours and more in familiar discourses with her maid. 3 hours. Hmm. And in some prayers. At last falling asleep, the door was shut. Again, Always a mistake. In the morning, the maid, taking notice that her mistress did not awake at the usual hour, went into the bedchamber and called her. But not being answered, doubting of some ill accident, opened the window. By the way, all the past tense verbs are apostrophe D, which is very fun. Uh-huh. And all the nouns are capitalized. Opened the window and saw the corpse of her mistress in this deplorable condition.
Yay.
Here it comes. 4 feet distance from the bed, there was a heap of ashes. 2 legs untouched from the foot to the knee, with their stockings on. Between them was the lady's head, whose brains, half of the back part of the skull, and the whole chin were burnt to ashes. Huh. Should we have had a content warning on this show? Retroactively, there's going to be Contessa brains.
You know, here's something you could do. Not imagine it.
Whatever you do.
Let the words just flow through you.
At least she's still wearing stockings. She's not the barefoot Contessa.
Right. It's, well, and it's like, that would be scandalous.
It would be very, very.
But wait, just to clarify, she's four, or her pile of ashes, rather, is 4 feet from the bed. So she did not climb into bed to combust?
Or she climbed out after
combustion
was imminent.
Ow!
That's what she said. Ow. Mamma mia. All the rest was, the whole chin were burnt to ashes, amongst which were 3 fingers found blackened. Hmm. All the rest was ashes, which had this particular quality that they left in the hand when taken up a greasy and stinking moisture. Ew. Not a good quality of all the quality ashes could have.
Hmm. Stinking and
you don't want it to leave a greasy and greasy. Stinking moisture.
Ew.
The air in the room was also observed cumbered with soot floating in it. This is not too different from George Mott's case, although she had not been watching the Twilight Zone revival.
Right.
A small oil lamp on the floor was covered with ashes, but no oil in it. 2 candles and candlesticks upon a table stood upright. The fire sources in the room are always cataloged as if to suggest that it couldn't have been them.
Right. Well, and also it was never hot enough to melt the candle.
Exactly. The cotton was left in both, but the tallow was gone and vanished. Interesting. What does that mean? They're just wick? Somewhat of moisture was about the feet of the candlesticks. These guys are now CSI, Emilia Romagna.
Somewhat of moisture. I love that turn of phrase.
The bed received no damage. The blankets and sheets were only raised on one side as when a person rises up from it or goes in. Yes, we are aware of how sheets get turned down. The whole furniture, as well as the bed, was spread over with moist and ash color soot, which had penetrated into the chest of drawers, even to foul the linens.
Yikes.
So this is like stuff in the fridge was melted, except it was the bed linens in the dresser that were sooty.
For some people, you should have trigger warninged that you were going to say moist.
Oh, I said, it's worse to say greasy and stinking moisture.
Yeah, that's true.
Nay, the soot was also gone into a neighboring kitchen and hung on the walls, movables, and utensils of it.
How many kitchens are in this house?
Why is there a kitchen next to it? She's very fancy. From the pantry, a piece of bread covered with that soot and brown black was given to several dogs, all which refused to eat it. You have to wonder.
Was that a test?
Yeah, is this part of the experiment? Hey, I wonder how delicious the greasy, stinking moisture is. Or is it like, we got to get rid of this? Yeah. I mean, that's what you would, you didn't have a garbage disposal in 1740. You'd be like,
give it to the dogs.
Hey, Sebastiano, equi.
Yeah. They're going through the cupboards and they're like, somebody's got to wash these soiled linens, but the bread, unwashable.
In the room above it was moreover taken notice that from the lower part of the windows trickled down a greasy, loathsome yellow liquor. And thereabout, they smelled like a stink without knowing of what.
Smelled like a stink.
But without knowing of what. And saw the soot fly around. I don't know who the subject of that is. It was remarkable that the floor of the chamber was so thick smeared with a gluish moisture. That it could not be taken off. So you can't dig in. And the stink spread more and more through the other chambers. So this makes the journals of the Royal Society, where this is a scientific treatise in 1746 about this death 15 years earlier. And it really, as you can imagine, strikes the imagination for the same reason you and I loved these accounts in the pulps and in the Time Life books.
Right. No apparent source of ignition. Very unusual for a body to be consumed and nothing else.
Yeah, inwardly. The house is fine, except again for the gluish moisture that covers everything.
But
the source is a person, something you would not have thought could just go up by itself.
It's well known what it takes to burn a body, which is not nothing, right? You have to build a pyre and the body has to burn on the pyre.
Yeah, when you to get cremains down to what they are,
it's
an extraordinary heat. It's a heat no regular fire can produce.
A heat no regular fire can produce.
That's the Uni pizza oven promise. We're now embedding the ads in the show. So this begins, a couple centuries of just public fascination with this thing. He calls it spontaneous human combustion in his English translation.
Well done.
It comes to the attention of none other than Charles Dickens. By the Victorian age, there's enough of these kind of occasionally making the papers, or folklore, or a doctor saying, well, you know what I once saw in my younger days.
So it keeps happening.
It keeps happening occasionally. Dickens, it's well enough known that Dickens can use it as a plot device. He, in Bleak House, he has kind of a sinister old man named Crook meet, you know, the worst of ends when he turns into a sticky gluish moisture in chapter 38.
Right, an unbearable stink. Well, it does seem conveniently Victorian. Right? Like, it has all the hallmarks of a Victorian.
It literally has candle lighting or gaslight.
Yeah.
It's either Gothic or post-Gothic, whichever.
Is there record of it in other cultures?
Most of the accounts we have are from Western Europe, because there have since been some scientific surveys of it. And then later in the Americas, you know, the first time it happens, the first time it gets to the public attention in the 1740s, this is a time when, except for a few gentlemen of the Roman Royal Society, nobody is thinking like, could this be galvanic fire? Which of the elements, you know, which of the alchemical, you know, so these people are, you know, even the scientists are like, clearly her humors were out of balance.
It was her humors. Which humor is flammable?
Yeah, exactly.
Bile?
I guess, yeah, whatever the anger one is, bile is choler, right?
Yeah.
But at the time, most people are thinking, well, you know, if somebody gets lit on fire in her chamber, it's one of two causes. It's God or the devil.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
Sure.
Because God is well known to smite.
Yeah.
And also, so a lot of.
I feel like if God did it, though, there wouldn't be a greasy, right, gross.
That could be diabolical.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact that the reason that God is very attractive is because. Well, I don't know if he's attractive or she's attractive or not.
I bet.
But the reason why God often gets pointed to here is because, well, clearly he would have the power to do it. He's omnipotent. He can get into a closed room. And also, a lot of the victims appear to have it coming.
Oh, really? They're named Crook? They're bad? All of them bad?
Well, think about the way tabloids tell stories. You know, even today I'm like, did he really watch The Twilight Zone and say, boy, I wish an unexplained event could have happened to me?
Right.
You know, details are dropped in or left out to make the narrative better. And in this case, a lot of the stories you read are, it's an older woman, it's somebody who's not particularly mobile.
But are they devout?
Often they are debauched. Often they are drunks.
Oh, drunks!
So they're disproportionately addicted, disproportionately women, disproportionately old, disproportionately dull and heavy. You know, it's... And you can see, you know, now thinking with the scientific method, you can think why more of these accidents might occur to elderly folks, people with mobility issues, people with alcohol issues. But back then, it's like, yes, just yeah. Like we would have burned them at the stake, God intervened and basically burned them at the stake for us and didn't even need a stake because he's God.
Does the alcohol in one's body contribute to the ethanolification of oneself?
There are still people who are following, who are saying yes, like, because a lot of this is still pseudoscience. The people writing extensively about spontaneous human combustion, as you might imagine, are not the National Institutes of Health. Mm-hmm. They are weirdos. Mm-hmm. And they're like, nobody has written about this, but I think there's a particular kind of ketosis that can happen in particular tissues if they're alcohol soaked for long enough. I think the mainstream view is no. Alcohol stays in your blood. It does not go into the most flammable cells of your body at all. And certainly not enough to, you know, to do that. But as the decades go on and people write about this more and more, and, you know, and journalists speculate and ill-informed doctors speculate, you get a lot of people saying, well, you know, we now know that the bones contain phosphorus. Mm-hmm. So clearly this is caused by phosphorus in the skeleton. Other people will be like, no, it's, you know, we know that alcohol burns and these are all drunk. So it's just something having to do with that. Ghosts and poltergeists are appealed to even by, you know, even by doctors. Mm-hmm. Clearly it's a poltergeist. Ball lightning, which maybe could be its own omnibus.
So I remember when we were at the age where we were clearly reading about this on opposite continents, I remember ball lightning being suggested because that was another unexplained phenomenon that would like come in the window and like float around the room.
And to this day, it's still contested what those eyewitness accounts are.
Of ball lightning.
Yeah, there's not like a...
Well, let's not give away the episode that we're going to do on it.
Someday ball lightning. But anyway, yeah, like some electrical storm got in and just zapped her the way lightning does, but she wasn't outside holding a parasol. She was sitting drunk in a chair. And even today, when you read about some of the pseudoscience surrounding this, you see the you know, poltergeist-level theories. In 1997, some, you know, does his own research researcher got a hold of some items from George Mott's apartment, maybe through scrupulous means, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. An auction,
eBay. Tested the book jacket that was closest to the bed against a normal book jacket.
And found greasy grease?
Probably. No, but even once cleaned off, he was like, there's different isotopes of carbon in this wood pulp than in that wood pulp. Now, you could say that the tree was older, but I think that there's actually some nuclear reaction that we, unknown to science, that can happen in the cells of the human body. And it was actually biological nuclear radiation that zapped Mr. Mott. By the way,
this is you saying this, or this is our researcher? No,
this is our researcher saying this. And therefore, you know, irradiating the book. I guess.
And pitting windshields all through Canada.
Exactly. This is very much the windshield hoax. Oh, the ultimate irony of George Mott. I should have closed the circle on this. He was a retired firefighter.
Oh.
So that made it irresistible to the papers.
Wow.
There's a 1995 lengthy book trotting out all the historical cases of spontaneous human combustion to the degree that the author hypothesizes that there's an unknown fundamental particle of the universe called the pyrotron that makes old drunks catch fire. Unable to find in the laboratory where there's not enough sedentary drunks.
And it seems to have no effect on any other...
Hard to observe anywhere else, but once every 10 years, it blows somebody up in a boarding house.
Like, there's never been a dog that spontaneously combusted, as far as anyone knows.
That's a good point. Doesn't seem to happen to children.
There are a lot of old, drunk dogs lying around.
And it doesn't seem to happen, as I say, in public, now that we all have cell phones. If this was really an underreported phenomenon, like alien abduction, you'd think we would see somebody just go, whoo, at a football game every now and then.
Right.
But no.
They have to be sleeping or sitting.
They have to be dull and heavy.
Yeah.
The first kind of scientific survey, by the 1820s, people have already figured out what these cases have in common, largely female, largely alcoholics. It's often the hands and feet that survive. The room around is unaffected. There's not an obvious source of the combustion. The greasy, smelly stuff is always present. But somebody just kind of goes up like a blowtorch and leaves these telltale signs in almost every case. By the 20th century, the literature has compiled 300 cases of these. There's a case in St. Petersburg, Florida in 1951, a woman named Mary Reeser. It's the same thing. The next day, somebody finds the doorknob warm and goes in, and the apartment is covered with a thin layer of Mary Reeser. The FBI finds that she often took, you know, you can't do an autopsy on a greasy soot,
right,
on a stinking moisture. But the FBI knows she has a history of taking sleeping pills. They find smoking stuff. So the FBI is like, she took too many sleeping pills and fell asleep with a cigarette in her mouth. This happens all the time.
Right. We heard this explanation.
A University of Pennsylvania researcher doing, you know, with access to all the same stuff, says that that's impossible. In fact, it's foul play. She was murdered. Her body was taken from the apartment, taken to a crematorium, the only thing that could burn her remains that hot, turned into ashes, taken back.
Leaving her shoes outside the oven.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Apparently dismembered in some way, or maybe you can leave the crematorium door open and just have some feet sticking out like the Wicked Witch of the East. Oh, and this is the ultimate kicker. And they, before leaving, the murderers must have warmed her doorknob.
Right.
to fool.
By rubbing their butts on it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's what the dog was doing. They had a drunk dog just rub his butt on it. It's clearly not spontaneous, right? We call it spontaneous human combustion. But no scientist likes that phrase. So in the 20th century, there's a movement to call it preternatural combustion.
Worse.
Yeah, which I guess, you know, in the sense of extraordinary, I guess, very unusual. Uh-huh. But it does make it sound inexplicable. Like, it makes it sound like it might be the hand of God or Beelzebub or both.
The holidays are expensive.
You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, what's curious is that whatever the source of ignition is, you still couldn't easily burn a body, even if you did have a, even if you sat there with a blowtorch.
It seems like not.
So if so,
why does it not just look like the skeleton you would recover from a house fire?
Yeah, if a cigarette falls on you, you go ah, even if you are dull and heavy, and if you're like insensible on sleeping pills, it would just smolder. It's not, you know, there's nothing. Well, anyway, go on.
The remains have nothing in common with burn victims, including, you know, the deceased from house fires, for example.
Because I know a guy who died of a cigarette falling on his mattress.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it happened about 15 years ago. He was a local musician and lived on Capitol Hill. And, you know, I think he was
dull and heavy.
He wasn't. He was like lean and cool. He was cool.
But had he had a few too many?
He had a few too many, and he fell asleep, and a cigarette fell on the mattress, and he died that way.
So, yeah, that's a common thing. And the
remains, that is a common thing.
It is. It's. Oh. I mean, you know, didn't you grow up in a world where people were constantly warning you about not smoking in bed? Didn't hotels used to have signs?
Yeah. And people did say that. Today, I was an avid smoker.
In bed?
But I didn't smoke in bed because, come on, I didn't smoke in my car.
You smoked in the bath.
I did smoke in the bath.
That's my prediction. But I mean, today.
But I was in the bath for 3 hours.
Today you can vape in bed. It's a better time.
Yeah, I guess so.
So many things are better now.
Thank heavens.
What happens in the 20th century is a skeptic movement develops, which we've talked about on the show before. I mean, you know, Amazing Randy versus Uri Geller and that movement. Of people who are going back to these old accounts and saying, yes, but it wasn't actually a ghost, or it wasn't actually a ghost ship, or just everything that's fun.
Right.
The Bermuda Triangle is actually a rhombus.
They took all the fun away.
Taking all the fun away from Time Life books. It's actually pretty easy to build Stonehenge. I'm going to do it.
Sure. Here are the 7 ways they could have built the pyramids. All of them just completely
alien free.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. And in a 1984 paper, it kind of deflates a lot of the lore of spontaneous human combustion in the ways you would expect. Like if you actually go through a survey of the cases, almost all of them, there is a plausible ignition source nearby. There's a stove or a space heater or a fireplace or something. So the mystery is overstated. The people are drunk, and what that probably, that's true, but what it probably means is not that they're soaked with, their tissues are soaked with ethanol in a way that creates a fire unknown to science. It really just means it probably dulled their response, like your friend smoking in bed.
Yeah.
You know, when in a lot of these cases, there is little to no soot in the airways of the victim to the degree that you still have, you know, if their skull survives, you can check.
Right.
And
they were already dead.
They were not breathing. Yeah. Something had happened. You know, they had, you know,
died.
They had died very quickly in whatever had happened. Maybe
heart attack.
Maybe unrelated. Yeah, a heart attack or a stroke or something. And you know, details are often left out of the story that would explain it more. The objects that are mysteriously left unburned, not that uncommon because fire tends to burn upward.
Oh.
Which means it doesn't go laterally.
Yeah.
You could burn in a very hot fire. You could have a very hot fire and a straw hat could just be 3 feet away.
Right.
And that's actually not do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's normal.
So it turns out most of them were freebasing with a like a propane torch and.
Well, it's probably something that the fire destroyed. Something else they point out is a fire hot enough to burn Mary Reeser's torso is also going to get rid of her cigarette or whatever.
Right.
You know, in a lot of these stories, there's a pipe sitting right next to the victim, and you can be like, "But the pipe is right there," just like the matchbook that was next to George Mott. But in most cases, yeah, like they were smoking and that didn't survive the fire. The stove may have been off because the first thing the victim did when the stove lit them on fire was go turn off the stove or something like that, you know, go turn off the fire or whatever it was. So that may be a case where, you know, it seemed like there was no fire source in the room, but in fact, that was the last thing the victim did.
But are there situations of spontaneous human combustion where it seems like the person was awake and turning off the stove and then went back still on fire and sat down in a chair?
Well, some of them are, you know, the ones that are 3 feet from the bed or from the chair, those are presumably the ones who knew what was going on and tried to do something in their final seconds.
Right, I see.
If they stayed dull and heavy in the chair or the bed, you know, probably, presumably they did not get up and turn off the stove and be like, well, I'm probably okay now, except that I'm, they're the, it's probably fine dog,
yeah,
just going right back to bed. That's not right. It's all fine. What's the meme?
This is fine.
This is fine. There we go. Yeah. Mine were not going to catch on. It's probably fine.
It's probably fine.
It's not going to catch on. And the literature also found a bunch of cases where what seemed to be spontaneous ignition clearly was not, you know, and maybe these were not textbook cases of people burning to death, but they found a Boston hospital where a patient often went into some kind of terrible seizure and suddenly he just starts smoking and they're like, this is spontaneous ignition, until the orderlies went over there and they found out that he was a secret smoker and had hidden matchbooks in his belt, or, you know, in his waistline of his pants. And then when he had a seizure, they started to rub together.
Whoa.
And the poor guy lights on fire.
Oh no. That is a really weird and terrible set of circumstances.
And this guy survived, I think. He was observed and they got to him in time. But if he'd headed to his chamber and then had a seizure with matchbooks in his belt line.
Right.
Another case, this is interesting. A guy on a park bench just goes whoomp, like his mouth just starts to, like flames come out of his mouth. And in this case, a cop is watching. So we have somebody seeing the moment of ignition. He runs over there and it's a great mystery. Until it turns out that in this guy's culture, I guess aluminum phosphide was at one time one of the most common ways to kill yourself in India. It just reacts with moisture and goes up.
Huh.
And so this guy had taken a million of those, and in his system, they lit him on fire from within. And
he did die.
It seems like that guy's a little less likely to survive, yes. I'm not 100% sure. These are just cases where somebody actually saw the moment of ignition and it was not
just
ball lightning and pyrotrons.
Right, I see.
Today, preternatural combustion is no longer the preferred term.
Is it back to spontaneous human combustion?
A lot of scientists are trying to get isolated central body combustion to happen.
Come on, scientists.
And
we already have a term.
ICBC. In this case, what they're trying to convey is that we think we understand now what the mechanism of most of these cases are. And I think this is just particular to the spontaneous human combustion literature. They call it the wick effect, because you can picture how a candle burns, right?
Yeah.
There's a fat source and
cotton.
And cotton, which can be lit. And you got fuel next to the cotton. And a person is kind of an inside out candle.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, we all have
cotton on the outside and fat on the inside.
Everybody in these stories was wearing clothes and everybody's got fat cells. And a lot of the people in this story have, you know, more fat cells than was typical at the time for the general population. And so you get a situation where whatever causes the ignition, it's a cigarette, it's a spark from the fire. It, you know, details were left out of the story in the paper, but something not all that strange put a spark on this person, and they were asleep or drunk or dazed or both, or, you know, some combination
already
thereof. Already dead from some health event. They could not be like, ooh, a spark, ooh, 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 which is what I would do.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's kind of, I said there was going to be a surprising low temperature. Here it is. Do you know what temperature human fat will melt at? If you knew, I'd be a little worried about you.
I don't.
That's good. That's to your credit.
Yeah.
Anybody listening that knows what temperature human fat melts at, please turn turn yourself into the authorities, Tyler Durden. It can be as low as like 0.5 Celsius. What's that? 34 Fahrenheit?
But I'm full of human fat and I'm 97.9.
Right. So depending on the kind of fat and the state it's in, it can be as high as 41 degrees Celsius or 105. But that's as high as it gets. And you must wonder, how come I do not simply melt on a hot day or in a hot tub or whatever? And the fact is, I mean, first of all, the body's very good at self-regulation. It keeps your fat cells at a temperature where they won't do that. But also, you are not a candle that's just pure hydrocarbon fuel. That fat is in a different form in fat cells. You know, yeah. Imagine it's in a bunch of, you know, millions of little bags scattered all over your body, and your body can regulate enough that your fat does not sadly melt away when you want it to.
Boy, that'd be awesome if all you had to do was get into a room that was 115 degrees and all your fat would melt away.
But if there's some cases where it's in the 30s Fahrenheit, that would not be a great world. If
no, that's
just
true.
At room temperature, bits of you melt.
Yeah,
depending on.
I mean, if you'd have to be constructed completely differently so that it melted into your pee or whatever.
Right. Or you just need to carry around a little, some kind of dish.
A little fat dish.
Yeah. You sit in a chafing dish at work. So the greasy stinking moisture can be taken out by an underling.
Human life could be so much more interesting, but I'm guessing that there are alternate universes where people don't poo who are like, God, wouldn't it be great if like all your old food and stuff you didn't want anymore, like
what happens to them? It just evaporates.
Well, I don't know. That's an alternate universe. They just it probably get bigger comes and bigger? Out in a foul, stinking, oily window coating.
This was probably in the original cut of Everything Everywhere All at Once. It wasn't just people with hot dog fingers. It was just people who never pooped. They just got bigger and bigger. So if you imagine the human body is an inside out candle, I mean, that's why the feet and hands and skull are often left. It's the fattier parts of the body that go up.
So why are pig feet so fat? All there is in a pig foot is fat.
It seems kind of gristly to me.
Yeah.
The one time
a little greasy.
I tried to eat a chicken foot once and there's literally nothing there.
But that's a chicken, not a pig.
I guess. I mean, but yet a bunch of our Caribbean listeners right now are happily eating chicken feet and thinking he's missing out.
Yeah.
They're going to do voodoo on me after.
Oh boy.
So it's maybe not so much of a mystery.
Really? That's what it comes down to?
It's the wick effect.
I kind of remember this being the conclusion back in the day and feeling really disappointed because it still seems insufficient. Because there are a lot of people whose cigarettes fall on them who are drunk. In fact, I might suggest the majority of drunks have had a cigarette fall on them.
And more to the point, the majority of the people that have dropped a cigarette on them were probably drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
You're less coordinated.
How did they not all catch on fire? But I guess it is just one of those, has to be perfectly...
Just who's already out.
Right.
And the fact that there's only a few hundred cases of this in the literature mean... You know, a couple crazy things have to happen.
Right.
You know, the countess has to already have had a stroke or,
right.
You know, so the person has to have taken enough sleeping pills that.
You know, maybe the ash falls in the person's lap and there's something about pubic hair because it would never show up in an autopsy, right? But maybe if it falls perfectly in the lap that the pubic hair is the thing that goes up first.
It is more the texture of dryer lint than other body hair.
And then the area right around there is also kind of like seems more combustible.
There have been kind of CSI-like studies of, you know, can we try this on carcasses or, you know, kind of Mythbusters kind of thing. Can we take this pig carcass, wrap it in a blanket,
the FBI is a weird place to work. So is MythBusters.
And it's, you see, when you can observe this, you do see like a very high temperature, low flame fire from a burning person that can absorb, you know, the candle tallow of their fat, with their clothing being the wick that keeps it going.
And nothing puts it out. I mean, I always thought, because they were so often situations where the person was missing for a few days, that it took a few days for the fire to smolder to that degree. But the Countess was last seen the evening before. Like, she was completely combusted by the morning. It always felt like
it's going to need
more time.
Yeah, it's going to be hours. Yeah. It's going to be a matter of hours, not days. It could be, you know, somewhere between, you know, it's an hour to a few hours. Right. And that's why they're always at night. That's why they're in a bedchamber. You know, you can see why a lot of the kind of the mysterious circumstances that they all have in common kind of make sense.
Right.
I guess the windshield hoax entry ended with the fact that nothing was happening.
Yeah, right. In fact, there was, not to quote our Facebook page all the time, but yeah, there was somebody who was like, that's my least favorite episode. I hated that episode.
Nothing happened.
And people were like, why? Well, because it turned out to be nothing. Like, well, did you really want it to be? Does an omnibus episode have to be about something? That's news to us.
We have not been acting as though that were the case. At least this one was something. It was just something kind of gross.
Yeah, something gross.
And the human body as inside-out candle.
Well, now, here's another thing. I have not heard about very many spontaneous combustions lately.
Lately, yeah. And that could be incidence of smoking declining, right? If most spontaneous combustions in the cigarette age were just cigarette butts,
right? Nobody smokes anymore.
That could be part of it. People are not as, are people alone as much? Maybe. I don't know. Is there fire suppression stuff?
I went to a rock concert down in Las Vegas not very long ago, and everyone involved in the tour was smoking real cigarettes. And I was like, what kind of throwback tour is this? But it was very effective in making it feel like a rock and roll scene.
Well, plus Vegas is going to smell like stale cigarettes everywhere you go.
It does, yeah.
I think I have read that maybe cigarettes are coming back a bit. Vaping has peaked, which is great. Good job, young people.
Vaping is lame.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Cigarettes are cool.
Imagine Betty Davis taking it like a drag on her vape and then saying something withering. It's kind of a different effect.
The thing about a vape is everybody who vapes seems to try and hide the vape. Like they tuck down and the vape is covered and then.
Why does it smell like raspberry in here all of a sudden?
Yeah, right.
It's like farting. You're kind of embarrassed at the cloud of smell you just made.
Yeah.
Not smokers.
No, smokers put it right in your face.
I smoke like this. So, yeah. So, the takeaway from the show, smoking is cool.
Smoking is cool, but don't do it if you're drunk alone and if you're heavy and dull.
Yeah, if you're dull and heavy. Every day you should have to take a little intelligence test to see if you're smart enough to smoke.
Yeah.
And if you can. In fact, the vending machine should make you do a little CAPTCHA. Like,
oh, right.
Like, which of these are a parking meter? What's the area of a parallelogram?
It's a public safety issue.
Exactly. Right? Only our brightest minds should smoke.
And that concludes Spontaneous Combustion, entry 1206.PR0627, certificate number 40714, in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media is a big crotch fire.
It's covered with a greasy, stinking residue.
Yeah. And we hope you don't have anything to do with it. You know, a lot of people, just in the last week, have been on me to get on Blue Sky. And the thing is, I was on Blue Sky right away, because back when first people were like, you've got to get on Blue Sky. Here's my code.
I'm still on Blue Sky.
I know. And I posted on it the other day. I decided, I was at the gym and they were playing Motley Crue. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be silent anymore. Motley Crue sucks and they always sucked. And the only way you could like Motley Crue is if you're wrong. And so even though I want Blue Sky to be a positive place, my first entry into it was to say, Motley Crue is bad, and if you like them, you're bad.
You can't control yourself.
And
you should have led with punk is bad.
And, you know, and there were a lot of people who were like, how dare you? But then there was one person that said, you and Ken are both posting on Blue Sky. Hooray. And I thought, is it hooray, though?
I don't think I'm going to be on Blue Sky that much. I mean, even if it becomes, I mean, we're acting like it becoming Twitter is best case scenario. But think about that. Think about what you're saying for a second.
Yeah. There's nothing going to be Twitter in 2010. There's nothing, there is no way to recapture that, is there?
Right.
I'm just on Blue Sky until the first person yells at me in earnest, and then I'll never return. The first person who's like, actually, or I don't know what. How do people yell at you? Do you even... Do you have your settings so that you only see verified customers?
I feel like the nice thing about Blue Sky being a little sparse is that nobody's really yelling at me.
Isn't that nice?
Because really, even on Twitter, most people were normal. But, you know, if one out of 1,000 isn't...
Yeah, they're the ones that are going to yell.
No, there's just fewer people.
Well, anyway, look for us, Facebook, Instagram, apparently Blue Sky... at Omnibus Project, at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick. But you can email us, not to yell at us, although it does happen. I mean, I guess you can email us to yell at us. Mindy Jennings will read it, and she is completely unaffected by you yelling.
I read all the email. I don't think Mindy does.
Oh, she doesn't?
I don't think so. Why would she read people yelling at me? Maybe she'd like that, actually.
But you can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can send us mail. Real mail. If you're going to yell at us, why not yell at us in the form of a Christmas card to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
It is funny. I do have somebody yelling at me in a Christmas card.
Oh, well, you went out and got the mail. What do you got there?
Sharon from North Dakota sent us a holiday card, Peace on Earth.
Famously grouchy people in North Dakota.
Well, no. You better watch out. She's the one who thinks we're too hard on North Dakota.
Had I better not cry?
Well, she, that's right. She says, Ken, this is a postcard from Grand Forks.
Oh, Grand Forks.
Good to know. But she says, John, I like hearing about your experiences in North Dakota.
Yeah, so there.
There's also a greeting card. This is a greeting card. Did I call a greeting card a postcard once and she's just been thinking about nothing else for weeks?
I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah, she's just like, no!
I sent a postcard. Why is he saying that's a greeting card or possibly vice versa?
You know, they call Montana Big Sky Country, but it really should be North Dakota called Big Sky Country.
Maybe it's Bigger Sky Country. And then Alberta, the biggest sky country.
Oof, Alberta.
She also says, John, I like hearing your very own pronunciation of words.
Uh-huh.
She's such an upbeat gal.
She is.
Thanks, Sharon.
What is the motto of North Dakota? Motto of North Dakota is liberty and union now and forever. One and inseparable.
Is that new?
I don't think so. It feels very much like a post-Civil War kind of motto. Liberty and union.
It's long.
It is long.
It's like 9 words.
South Dakota's motto is, under God, the people rule.
Whoa.
So it gives you a sense of why those two states don't get along.
I guess it was going to be the people rule, and then they were like, excuse me, yeah. What about God?
Thank you.
Who's actually ruling here?
Thank you.
But does under God the people rule imply that if you discount God, the people rule? Or as long as they worship God, the people rule? Or does it mean that
God rules
in their own separate tier, God accepted, in the human world, people rule?
I guess. God, under God, people rule. Yeah, it's got to be under the power of God. Only Christians rule is what
there's it plenty is. There's plenty of theocracies where the people are not doing that much ruling. In fact, in most theocracies...
Yeah, they're ruling just on, as God's agents. Whereas liberty and union now and forever, one and inseparable.
Yeah, angry.
That's definitely like plant a flag.
Sean Patrick Reedy, known on Facebook as the Meandering Minstrel,
okay,
enjoyed the Tartans show enough to send you
the $1,200 tartan outfit.
No, although he is wearing a tartan in this photo, isn't he? He's wearing a kilt. No, he sent us a Great Highland Bagpipe Chanter Reed.
Oh, how cool.
He says, I should plug my ears and you should blow into it. Do not blow too hard. It will be difficult, so be careful not to pop eardrums.
Oh, wow. Really?
I don't know.
There's a lot going on. I'm hoping that this is not one that he has used. It seems new.
It was sealed in a thing. Are you supposed to blow in the other side? Are you supposed to blow in the reed or in the...
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. I don't know.
Should I moisten it?
I don't know.
In most reeds, you have to kind of moisten. I'm making my best bagpipe face.
We'll just add bagpipe music right now.
I cannot get it to sound.
Sean, you sent us a broken chanter. We'll continue to play with that. Thank you so much. Well, pretty much
a handmade thing here.
It was just in this little canister with a cotton ball.
It doesn't seem to have anything that would...
Yeah, that would make it buzz, right?
Unless... Maybe I moistened it a little bit.
Blow into reed, but please do not blow too hard. He's a little bit of a micromanager, the meandering minstrel. More like the meandering micromanager.
It's not...
Or possibly the micromanaging minstrel would be a little better. But thank you for sending that along. Please follow up with instructions. What are we doing wrong? What is this? Ben wants us to know that... I think we were talking about the Anaheim Angels becoming the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And he wants us to know that in 2015 there was a Final Jeopardy clue about that.
Oh, what do you know?
Good to know.
How did you not reference every Final Jeopardy question that ever comes up on
the show?
What
was I doing on October 16th, 2015? Maybe still mourning the Challenger?
The 2015, it's pre-omnibus, right? You were still laboring away writing books for children. When did you write the children's series? Over what period?
I don't know, 5 to 10 years ago, maybe a little more, 7 to 12 years ago.
That would have been right around then, 2015.
Todd from Linden, Washington. Hi, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
Sent us a book, like a Cold War era book, a 1987, U.S. government publication called Soviet Military Power.
Wow.
It notes at the beginning that the U.S. government has not recognized the incorporation of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania into the Soviet Union.
And I think Estonia...
Continue not to.
I think Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania concurred with the U.S. government.
But here's a bunch of pie charts if you're wondering about the Soviet warhead mix in 1987. I love pie charts.
Well, you know, I think a lot of that stuff was just plain wrong. I think the CIA...
Yeah. Here's an oil painting. I don't know if it's Soviet art or our art of Soviet art.
It looks like our art it looks like their art because that is a bad art.
But there's no women on tractors. Anyway, artist's conception of many Soviet superweapons, some of whom possibly existed. I'm sure you'll enjoy that.
Soviet military power. It's a beautiful, beautiful, like, publication. The Gazelle... silo-based missile. You know, this actually, in this photograph, do you see that, like, weird pyramid with the radar on it?
Yeah.
That is actually modeled on one that I've wanted to do an omnibus on many times. Here in the United States.
It's one of ours?
Yeah, I don't think that they have one of those.
I just talked, speaking of which, this is, you know, you did the show about Albanian bunkers.
Yeah.
I just talked to somebody yesterday whose friend has, like, fallen in love with Albania and has spent all his money, it's some person of means, spending all his money turning them all into schoolhouses.
Boy, I don't believe anything about that story.
Is it? Are they the right size?
No.
They're too small, right?
Yeah, schoolhouses.
But I guess he's like, the problem is they're all, maybe these are other larger bunkers, but there's all this Cold War stuff left there that just doesn't have a heating source. So he's like retrofitting them all with heating systems so that all these Soviet area bunkers can become... elementary schools.
The problem in Albania seems larger than just what do we do with these Soviet-era bunkers.
They have two problems. Too many bunkers, not enough schools, and it took this genius to see the solution.
I feel like one of the problems is the entire country occasionally invests in a Ponzi scheme, and they lose their entire economy. That seems to happen, at least, even if it only happens once, that's one time too many.
What are the exports of Albania? Maybe that's the problem. None. Few to none. Several dried fish and some wool.
Well, I don't know if they even have dried fish there. I guess
they would kill for some dried fish.
Let's see.
We're angering our Albanian listeners.
Main Albanian exports: minerals,
yay,
chromium, textiles, right? And
they do have some oil. Crude petroleum, leather, footwear. In 2012, the biggest cash export was petroleum.
Huh. I mean, if you have any petroleum, that's going to be one of your big...
Right. Especially if leather footwear is second. And number three, footwear parts. So they can't even put the shoe together. They're like, some of them, they're just like, send this to Greece.
I feel like if oil is the number one export and leather footwear is the next one, that maybe oil isn't even really... Maybe you don't have that much oil. It seems like you should be exporting something before leather footwear.
Yeah.
But we're not making fun of Albania. We love Albania.
We're celebrating it.
Yeah.
They gave us John Belushi. Oh, speaking of which, since I have a segue. Let's see. Boy, this is a very long letter that starts with a Mitch Hedberg quote.
Uh-oh. Warning sign.
Let's see. Dallas only found the show when you got bean-dadded, and then he got Streisand affected into being a fan of yours.
How does that work?
Have you heard stories like this? Like when you, Barbara Streisand, hoping to keep pictures of her Malibu home out of the papers, files a lawsuit, and as a result, more people than ever see pictures of her home.
Right.
Have you heard other people that became fans of yours because of the Streisand effect?
No, that seems kind of... I wish that had happened. I mean, we certainly increased our Patreon by the effect, I think, of a lot of people saying, you know what? I'm on Team J-Rod, but I didn't know that so many people were drawn into the whole universe.
He suggests some omnibus topics, including the Juicero, but he sent us,
two greeting cards?
Some postcards from... No, these are not greeting cards. These are postcards from the Baltimore Streetcar Museum, a place where he never went despite growing up there. He has no idea why these were in his father's effects, but...
Well, if his father lived in Baltimore, it's maybe not crazy that he would have these.
But he sent us the National Lampoon Sunday newspaper parody. I've never read this. A fictional copy of the, for example, Dacron Republican Democrat.
Mm-hmm. This is like proto onion.
Right. Remember the yearbook they did? I had forgotten they had done a Sunday paper. But look, it's got a fake shopping supplement, fake metro page, fake lifestyle page. This looks great.
I mean, the fake yearbook was the source of Animal House. It was like the generating impulse, right?
That's why Belushi is my segue here. I don't really know what
So why did the Sunday paper not become a motion picture?
Maybe we need to option this. Powder Room Prowler strikes anew. Actually, you probably want to stay away from that nowadays.
It's pretty good. This is pretty good looking.
If you just saw that, you would think it was a small town paper, except for maybe the Dacron part.
Dacron, Ohio. That's pretty funny.
Dayton plus Akron equals Dacron. Thank you so much, Dallas. I'm really going to enjoy that.
Is your child a dip? You know, that's the thing is, these days we can't use any of the insults that we used to use as Generation Xers because they were all terrible.
But isn't dip okay?
But you could call somebody a dip.
Yeah.
Or a dipweed. I used to use the term dipweed.
We never said dipshit, but we said dip.
Yeah.
Don't be such a dip.
God, you're such a dip. But
dipweed.
But you couldn't say dipshit if you were around adults, but you could say dipweed. And then you kind of realize like dipweed's a kind of a better insult.
Yeah.
Like you're such a dipweed.
Well, we used to say dillweed, I think, as a minced oath for dickweed.
Oh, I see.
But dillweed. But dillweed is kind of a... There probably is a dillweed. Is dill not a weed? Not all herbs are weeds, I guess.
All weeds are herbs, but not all herbs are weeds.
As is so often said. I think it's the state motto of North Dakota.
I do feel like, you know, there are insults like ding-dong that are kind of worse by being so anodyne.
Yeah.
That
like even a middle-aged man in the 50s would think you were a yo-yo.
Yeah,
that's like, kind of what it implies.
What a yo-yo you are. It's just so... I feel like those are more effective insults, and I think dipweed is pretty good.
But if you go too far back, like, it is derived from dillweed. You can't be like Shakespearean and say, what a dunderhead.
I think you can call someone a dunderhead.
I'm not a fan of that.
It makes you sound like a grandpa.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas calling somebody a ding-dong makes them sound like a grandpa.
That's true. There's some sweet spot. I wonder if it moves up in time. I wonder what will next become the old-timey insult.
Well, you know what a good
probably dip.
You know what a good old-timey insult is now?
No.
To call someone a f***er. You're such a f***er. God, you are a f***er. Because when was the last time somebody used that in earnest? It was 1977. Nobody has used that as
And we're going to bleep this, so no one knows what you're saying now.
Oh, we do. We bleep swears. Oh, right. Except we're in the outro.
Even in the outro. It can still be on in the car.
Futurelings, you can also hang out with other futurelings. Wherever if you Google Futureling, it's going to take you somewhere, and that's
you'll get weird AI results, and then you'll get a link to the Facebook page.
And I think more than anything, we would like to encourage you to support the show by going to patreon.com/omnibusproject and making a generous contribution. If you do, you will get not only so many benefits, but you'll have the satisfaction of knowing that you are a good person who's going to heaven.
And we will get benefits. Your money.
Yeah, we will get benefits, but you
get more benefits.
Yeah, you do get a lot of benefits. I mean, I was going to say...
It's win-win. It's mutualism.
You get more benefits than we get money, but that's not true because we haven't determined how much you're going to give.
It's true.
If you gave a lot of money... Let's say you are recently came into a lot of money and you want to say
Grandpa died.
You want to say, well, no, I was thinking like your app that you've been working on
went public.
Yeah, while listening to Omnibus while you were developing it, and you're like, you know what, I wouldn't have made the new Angry Birds if it weren't for John and Ken. Yeah, you know, you could
I'd like to give them $8.6 million, and we don't have a tier that actually will adequately compensate you for that. So in that case, we will make out like bandits.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You'll get some extra episodes that someone who donates $5 or $10
a month. You get the same perks as the $20 donor, basically.
But you gave us $8.6 million.
Uh-huh. So yeah, you just get the good feeling.
Right. I mean, the thing is...
We're coming out on top in that
transaction. Ken already has $8.6 million, whereas I have not even $6.6 million. So if you gave me $8 million, then I could stand...
Do I get the $0.6 or not?
I could stand on equal footing with Ken, and he would stop bullying me.
Finally.
He'd be like, well, hang on. Let me just pick my teeth with these gold toothpicks. And I'm like, God, again?
Why does he have to end every argument with, but at least I have more game show winnings than you?
It's so aggressive.
Stop saying that.
So anyway, go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and start at $10 a month and see how you feel. Maybe it'll take you up to 20.
Yeah.
When you feel like...
Adjust later. You could go a little up, a little down.
Yeah, you start feel at 10. So good that maybe you'll be like any drug, you'll be like, maybe if I double the amount...
Because I don't feel as good in the second month. Yeah. I'm just going to have to double it.
Double it.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, though, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.